3, 2, 1. We're here today with another episode of the I Love Norfolk Show with Molly Tillman of the Industrial Cottage.
Cottage. Yes.
Perfect. That one's sticking. That one's staying. And I don't know if you've watched or listened to many of what we do, but we start back from the past. You know, where what took you to get to today and the vision that you've created, and then a little bit more about what it is and what, you know, kind of the beauty or the restoration or the vision that you're trying to cash into the world, or throw into the world, and then, you know, where do you want to see this go? So let's dig back into the skeleton closet.
How did I get here?
What created the Molly Tillman that you see today and the vision that we have here?
All right. Well, I have always been very creative. When Quentin and I got married 25 years ago.
Okay.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I had my first home. I was looking around and I'm like, I want all of these cool looks, but I didn't have the budget. So I begin to pull out my sewing machine. I'm like, I'm going to make my curtains. Mm-hmm. I'm going to paint it, like, do these things. I'm going to paint this piece. I'm going to decorate.
Kind of art, like, get in there and just create something?
Has that been okay? Yeah, I've always been kind of a little crafty. My mom used to make fun of me. I would arrange my room from the time I was 12 years old.
Arranging your room at 12.
Yeah, just rearrange things. Yeah. So it was just kind of in me to do design, create, that sort of thing is just sort of in my DNA.
Cool. I think when we, because we've actually met before, funny enough, I was like, I know this person. But we met because we were talking about adoption stuff.
Yes.
And we went over to your previous house, of which you guys had spent a ton of time and energy renovating.
Yes.
And I would say it has a lot of similar feel and touch, like the farm, like a rustic, maybe high-end farmhouse.
Kind of modern farmhouse,
maybe a little bit.
Yeah. Yep. So I just kind of started that way doing my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, landed in the textile world, sewing, and began to sew for different designers.
Really?
Because I loved kind
of... Local designers?
Yes. And this is, we were living in North Carolina.
Okay.
So I would go pick up fabrics, bring them home, sew all the pillows, turn around and drop them off. And I was able to stay home with my kids and still have a little bit of a career and still be in that textile fabrics. I love fabrics. I love color, and kind of still be growing and keep my fingers in that.
Sure.
On the pulse of kind of what design and all that was doing.
Did you go to college at all for...
I did a year and a half of college for nursing.
Okay, nursing.
Believe it
really?
Or not.
Okay.
Yep. And then
nothing in the arts.
Nothing in the arts. Isn't that funny? It took me a little bit to kind of grow up and figure out what I wanted to do.
Okay.
And so as I begin to do that, everything that I do now is kind of a self-taught.
Mm-hmm.
I would see something and I'm like, I don't know how to do that, but somebody does. And so there's always a book. There really wasn't much YouTube back
then. Yeah, the YouTube resource today is insane.
Yeah, so now we can just YouTube it. Back then we couldn't.
Local library, go get a book.
Right, okay, so you just get a book. Wow, I'm really dating myself.
That's
now.
All right. I mean, I did the same thing. I remember, I feel so nerdy saying this. I remember wanting to go to the library because, one, they had some free snacks, and then they also had like a Lego room. And then, I didn't have to check out the books because my mom always got mad at me because I would take them home and then lose them or something. So the solution was go get free snacks, play with Legos, and then you could read all the books you wanted. And then we left with no books.
Yeah.
Not so, but that was kind of one of the things I do. And one of my favorites was, How It's Made books.
Yes.
So I felt those were fascinating.
Yeah. I think at one point I had pretty much checked out every design book from every designer in the library section and ordered them from all the other libraries to be sent to me just because I like to, whether I like that style or not, I wanted to thumb through it and see what all the different styles were.
Sure.
So just kind of, again, keeping my pulse, my fingers in that industry. And so that led us to, 2006, we actually launched the Industrial Cottage as a baby bedding manufacturing company.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
Still the same name?
Yes. That's how, okay. We started, again, I was sewing it all, mm-hmm. there in Apex, North Carolina. And, we went to, all the trade shows. We were selling nationally, mm-hmm. to all the little specialty brick and mortar stores, and did pretty well for about a year and a half. And then the big economic crash, 2007-2008, mm-hmm. That hit, and all the little specialty brick and mortar baby stores just started closing their doors left mm-hmm. and right. Because people were no longer able to pay $800 for a custom made linen,
sure.
Nursery set when, you know, Target had them
house.
You're losing your house, and Target had them for $100.
Yeah.
So, at that point we made the decision to, we could either, you know, launch a new line and send a lot of our sewing to China, mm-hmm. and order in all our sheets and the bedding and go that direction.
When you say you, the Industrial Cottage was doing this for other manufacturers?
No, okay. We were doing all the manufacturing ourselves,
okay.
like as in me. I had a couple ladies that mm-hmm. I would sub out certain parts of the set, like they would make all the ties and bring them back to me. But the actual manufacturing was really being done in the back room of our house.
Yeah,
I was still just sewing like crazy to meet demand.
How did you, can you go down that like decision tree of like, do we outsource this to China or not?
Yeah.
Like how did that decision get made? Did you struggle with it?
I really struggled with it because mm-hmm. like, if you look at like the furniture industry and, the fabric industry leaving North Carolina, it left a long time ago.
Mm.
And so my heart for buying local and everything staying local, you're like, I want to be part of this movement to bring it back, bring everything back. And then, but you're looking at the family next door, and I mean my own family. I'm like, I have to go to Target. How do I afford
sure.
to buy what my neighbor is making, what I can't afford myself?
Right.
I can't even afford to buy my own stuff.
Do we go on vacation this year, or
right.
do we, you know, buy these sheets? Do
right.
we get organic, or do we get this, you know, custom made
right.
thing? Yeah.
So okay. there is this tug of war. And I think every family, every mom, every dad, you're like trying to balance, like, what is most important?
Mm.
What do I need to go to Walmart and buy? And what can I go to my local store and
yeah.
buy?
You ever heard the quote, show me a man's schedule or show me his budget and I'll show you his priorities.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really interesting point you bring. Cause I think that's when people say, you know, that, you know, so-and-so got elected, this person got elected, it's going to change the world. I'm like, yeah, those things matter, but you know, what really, really matters? Where you spend your dollar every single day.
And we have, I think, seen that so much. And I'm getting off topic a little bit, but like
no,
with COVID
mm-hmm.
is, I think, like, we say that in our head, but when COVID hit, it was scary. And when we're watching our neighbor's restaurant close and all of these things happen, I think people really have said, you know what, I am going to choose to buy this $30 candle from the little shop downtown and not go to, you know, Walmart and purchase the $5 candle.
Yeah, yeah.
I am going to choose one instead of 12 of a cheaper item.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've really seen that because people are realizing, like, my neighbor's store is really not going to be there.
Sure.
And yeah, we know in our head they're dependent, you know, everybody says, oh yeah, they're dependent upon my dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But until it's like you see it actually happening and the board's going up,
yeah.
It was, I think, I don't know, we've really seen so many of our customers really, really step up and put their dollar where, you know,
their mouth is.
Yeah. Really this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where we found ourselves, like, going, what do we do? And so we started the conversations talking with a couple manufacturers in China about, what if we just do our sheets, these linen crib sheets, which were a huge, they were pretty awesome. That was a big seller for us, and a big selling point for our whole set. So we're like, what if we send the sheet and get that price down lower? And then that would give us a little bit of the cushion we needed to lower some of the other prices.
Sure.
And I was in the middle of working that out. And if you send all your manufacturing overseas, I don't know if many people know this, but you're going bulk.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm doing it myself, and a brick and mortar store in California orders five sets, mm-hmm. I can make 10 sheets and send them.
Hmm.
And I can leave my bolt of linen in the corner and I don't have to, you know, invest $1 million.
Hmm.
Where when I'm going to place an order for white linen sheets from China, I am ordering 5,000 of them and mm-hmm. 5,000 in cream and mm-hmm. 5,000 in tan.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're really putting money into it. So we started these conversations and realized we were going to have to put the money up front. And in the middle of those conversations, the company we're dealing with, I guess one of the main, I don't know if it was the CEO, managers, whatever, and the sales rep, they were actually got in a fight
mm-hmm.
and started sending me like emails like about their fighting and bickering, and it got really weird. And so mm-hmm. I was like, pulling the plug on that one real fast. Mm-hmm. And so that actually kind of saved us. That killed that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And answer that question for me. I was like, this is too, I'm not doing this. And
sure.
I was already kind of iffy about it. And I was like, I'm not sending hundreds of thousands of dollars over to people that I can't even communicate. I can't even talk to them face to face. I can't even, all the samples they sent me kept getting mixed up because they were fighting. I was like, this is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that killed that. And then we made the decision. We either have to launch a whole new line because mm-hmm. it was that time again. To be competitive, we have to do a whole new line of bedding, or we have to say, let's take a step back and not go into all this debt for our family
mm-hmm.
and see what this recession kind of thing does. And that's what we opted to do. We kind of took a step back and regrouped. And during that time, we ended up moving up here to Virginia,
mm-hmm.
Be a little closer to family. And
how much family do you have here locally?
My parents, my brothers and sisters, like everybody's here.
Okay.
So we were kind of the odd man out being in North Carolina.
Yeah.
So we moved up closer to family, kind of got resettled, and then decided to expand our family mm-hmm. through adoption. Or we started fostering, and then that kind of led to adopting. We didn't know if it would or not, but it did. And mm-hmm. so we ended up adopting three more children.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of toward the end of that process, we had just adopted our youngest, who is now four, Skye, and she was 4 months old. And I was like, I have not done anything creative in a really, really, really long time, and mm-hmm. I'm going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I painted a coffee table for our living room, and I put it in the living room, and I was like, it's not the right size. It was too small. It didn't look right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put it on Facebook Marketplace and sold it in like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, So I painted something else.
Wheels started kind of turning there.
I think it's just that if you have those kind of genes, you're broken that way. And so, of course, being the broken person that I am, I was like, paint that dresser. Sold it in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then that 3 months later, I had taken over the garage,
mm-hmm.
the dining room,
mm-hmm.
the sunroom, half the kitchen.
Do you feel like you've always had a little bit of an entrepreneur gene?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
When do you think you kind of picked up on that?
When everything I make, I'm like, how could I sell that?
Yeah.
It really is. It's, I don't know why I'm hardwired that way,
mm-hmm.
but everything that I make, there's something like, how can you market that?
Sure.
How can you?
I have one of my personal favorite stories was of myself, because I'm the subject, right? I had my dad worked at this like aviation electronics testing facility, and he would bring home, they would use these magnets, and then after, so many cycles, the magnet has been worn down, and so they replace them with new ones. And so he brought them home, and they were like, even though they were worn down, they were still super strong. And I would take them to school and play with them.
Mm-hmm.
And some kid offered me some money for it, and like, click. So I was just went home. Hey, Dad, can I get some more? Hey, can I get some more? And so, naturally, as a young man, my first inclination is to spend it on food. Because we had, it was just when Chick-fil-A had made like an agreement with our school to provide like chicken biscuits in the morning and like sandwiches, and that was it. That's all they provided. But I was like, I really want Chick-fil-A. And so I would go and sell these magnets so I could buy Chick-fil-A. And then I got in trouble because I wasn't supposed to be selling unauthorized materials at the school. And of which then I just created a black market.
There's always a way to sell something. Yeah.
I was always as soon as I learned like I could do something and get paid for it, mm-hmm. I was like, well, I want to do more of that thing. Mm-hmm. I would go out. I was the kid who would awkwardly show up at your doorstep and say, hey, can I mow your lawn? Well, we got mowed last week. I'm like, yeah, but it looks like it needs another. I would try to like convince them, you know, and I'm like, you know, 12 years old. So mm-hmm. I'm cute. I was cute. And and so, you know, and then I would do it. Can I come back next week? And so that was kind of, I've always had that bug of like, you mean I can do a thing mm-hmm. and get paid for it? You know, and it's not just strictly like dollars per hour. I can go out there and if I do more of it, I get more. Mm-hmm. So that was always something that was kind of like tingling in the back of my ear. Then I joined the military. I don't know.
What were you thinking?
I met Rachel, so I can't complain. Any other kind of like big struggles that you think you've like seen as you guys have progressed and gotten bigger that you like? I'm always interested in hearing like the overcoming of struggle.
I think when we found this space, I was not looking to open a store yet. I was looking for a space to paint. Mm-hmm. And I was still at that point just selling by word of mouth off my Instagram. Mm-hmm. I think at that point I was like, you know, yay, I have like 300 followers and mm-hmm. word of mouth is spreading mm-hmm. and you know, Facebook Marketplace, that kind of thing. And so I was looking just for, I'm like, I got to get this out of my house. I can see that I have something. And I realized it was, paint for me, it's color, mm-hmm. it's texture, it's furniture, it's design. It put everything together for me. And mm-hmm. I was kind of like this, moment where I was like, this is what I was made to do. Mm. Like it really put everything together my whole life, all these little things that I had been doing into one aha moment.
Sure.
And I absolutely love it.
I always find that it's sorry to interrupt
you. No, you're fine.
I think, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people that are either shifting careers. I have a friend that just moved here from Colorado who just got out of the Navy. And he's like super anxious. I'm like, dude, there's so much opportunity. Like, I hear often, like, I put all these resumes out. I'm like, yeah, I mean, you're going to get turned away. You know, they're going to take the best person they think is the best fit. But like, the fact that you can choose to do it mm-hmm. and that we have all of these mediums to connect you to basically infinite everyone on the planet and be able to put out your vision into the world and get compensated for it is just so cool. I just think we live in such a cool time where mm-hmm. if you have a vision, there are resources, there are coaches, there's someone that's even done it before, probably.
Yes.
The likely that you are, you know, in a burgeoning field or, you know, treading new territory, it's just unlikely. There's someone that has done it that you can probably follow the template and then create your own thing. Mm-hmm. And so I look at this and I'm just like, this is so cool.
Thank you.
So neat to see. I just get really excited for anyone who, like, all right, well, you know, I go up against a hardship and I'm going to overcome it. I'm going to go up another against a hardship and I'm going to overcome it. And I'm going to create this vision. Mm-hmm. And so when I see stuff like this, I just get really excited.
Thank you.
Cool. So tell me, I guess, we talked a little bit about your paints, like being very specific. Can you talk about like materials and textures and like mm-hmm. what exactly is the industrial cottage? What's the specific vision?
So we take vintage furniture, good solid wood, dovetailed drawers. Mm-hmm. It's just out of date. And so again, it's sort of that recycling, being responsible. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of us have hand-me-down pieces from parents, grandparents. We feel like, you know, it's got some memories to it, mm-hmm. or, you know, I don't like it, but it's got memories to it. I can't get rid of it. What do I do with this piece? But it works. Mm-hmm. It's just ugly. So we are updating it, painting it, adding new hardware, new bases, and just bringing it up to date. It's something that is already here. It's already made. And then, again, helping you take it and bring it into styles that you want currently in your house. So, you know, you have an antique secretary that grandma gave you. It's brown. It's been sitting in your house. You don't want it. It's been sitting in your garage. But, you know, if I lacquer it hot pink and you put it in your daughter's room, now she loves it and will love it for a really long time.
The next, a whole other generation.
Right. Yeah. And now she has these memories. This was my grandma's and it's really cool. And everybody loves it again. And it's something that's used. It's in your house. It's
rather
not molding
it
in a storage unit
curb or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, just helping again.
Now, do you
used and loved.
Only grab stuff and restore it yourself and sell it? If someone said, "Hey, I love your style. Will you transform this for me?"
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Okay. About, 50 to 60% of what we do is people bringing me their stuff. So we have a whole section in the back that's kind of blocked off of people's stuff that's in line to be done. So that's another thing we want to, you know, help you. We have whole design services, packages that you can buy where we can go into your home and help you say, you know, this dining room table, it's gorgeous. Let us refinish this table for you and paint your existing, you know, china cabinet that you have. And then, you know, you do need new chairs. These are not worth painting. We try to really be very honest with you. I'm not going to tell you, yes, pay me a ton of money to paint that. If it's, I'm like, it's not worth it. It's not worth putting the money into. Let's update this with something new. This is worth saving and painting. This is not going to look like what you want painted. Don't do that.
How does that work with things that maybe need a little restoration, like the hardware's janky or messed up or a drawer has been racked too hard and is cracked and, you know, things
we,
like that?
We work with a really good finish carpenter, so we can repair and refinish. Some things do need a lot of repair and refinishing before we can even get to the painting side of things. So we do all of that as well. So some of that, just basic fixing drawer tracks, basic repairs, nicks and scratches, that's included in like the basic price of things. Sometimes it's like, that's extra. This thing comes, I picked up a lady's grandfather's secretary. It literally came to us in a box. So that's going to have to be, you know, I'm like, I can't even quote you on this until we, the carpenters take a look at it and we see what we're dealing with.
It makes me think a lot of, you know, like in my world with flipping and historic homes, you know, a lot of historic homes, especially in lower price point neighborhoods, we'll just never see the love that they could get because the, you know, just at a price point where they can't afford it, you know, because replacing actual cedar shingles is very expensive versus, you know, some vinyl art, you know, alternative or just wrapping it in vinyl right on top of it, or some of the architectural details like dentils and trim work that if you were to pay, you know, someone who is familiar with the area or period or style to come in and restore it is just super cost prohibitive. I imagine there's maybe a little bit of that where someone comes in and say, hey, I want to do this. And you're like, look, you can do it and you're going to spend this more money than if you bought a brand new piece. Right. What do you want to do here?
Right. And that we really try to help the customer make the decision. Because there are a lot of different levels in which they can do it. Yes, we can, you know, strip this thing down, have the finishers, carpenters restore every little chip and every little piece of molding back to its original. We can restain everything, you know, do it in mint condition, but that's hours and hours and hours worth of labor. And we're talking thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the cheapest option is really, if you want, I carry the paint here and you can take a paint class and I would love to show you how to do it yourself. And you can patch and putty those holes and paint it yourself and walk out of here with the cans of paint and go home and spend minimal money and restore that piece yourself. So we try to go like hit all budgets to where,
I like that. That's really a very smart marketing move.
Yeah. You really can buy the paint and do it yourself. Yeah. And we have a lot more this next year. Our focus, we really want to get a lot more videos out there for people so that they can choose to do it themselves if they want to.
Like, here's how you fix this type of hinge, or if this is broken, this is how you fix it.
Right. Here's how to get that. We just did a class on how to do the raw wood look. That's really popular right now.
Okay. Is that this right here?
Yeah, this table, we actually, it had a poly, that shiny poly finish on it. It was old, it was all chipped up, just looked like an old yucky table. Mm-hmm. I actually got it super cheap because it did look so bad, and we just stripped it all the way down. Mm-hmm. And now it's a pretty fabulous raw pine table.
Makes me think, I actually have a table at my house that I might, because I saw a table back there I want. I might trade you out and let you restore that one and take the other one. So we'll have to connect after this.
Yeah.
What about like paints? You said paints and textures, things that you mentioned earlier. What specific types of paint do you use and why? And
We use a lot of the Fusion Mineral paint.
Okay. I have no idea what that means.
It is a non-toxic, no VOCs. You can paint in your house with kids, with dogs, with everything.
Is it different than chalk paint?
It is a little bit smoother than a chalk paint. So we paint a little differently with it. Chalk paint is meant to go on a little bit thicker. You can kind of paint it in a little bit more of a crisscross fashion, and I'm going to sand it. It's meant to be a little bit more of a chippy country look.
Okay.
You don't have to use chalk paint that way, but it's meant to be a little bit more of a look, a country look. Where with the Fusion Mineral paint, we put on a little bit more, like two or three thinner coats. We can get a nice clean look and seal it to where I tend to, my overall look tends to be a little bit more classic.
Okay.
Just a clean, painted, sealed, no distressing.
Okay.
We just want a nice piece of furniture. I'm going to put a little bit more of a modern pull on it. And it doesn't have to be a little bit more, again, that modern farmhouse
look. Is this piece back here an example of that?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is the Fusion Mineral paint. The color is Sacred Sage.
And some updated knobs, I see.
Yep, some updated hardware on it. So it just gives it a little bit. These cabinets right behind us, that is the Fusion Mineral coal.
Okay.
An example, those had a very country door on them that had the arch that kind of really dated it a little bit. Early 90s, we took the doors off, puttied and filled all the holes, and just painted them out black, nice and clean. Gave it a much more updated look, and sealed them.
Okay.
So that's the Fusion allows us to get a little bit more of a clean look. Again, you can, it's very minimal prep. You still do have to clean and do a light sand. You might have to prime if it's a light color to keep it from bleeding through.
So I know, like in the construction world, there are a lot of things that are done because of like it's fast to do or it's like either one, the installation or like the cure time is quick. Is it just as fast or like is it a little bit slower on how to use the paint or?
Super fast.
Okay.
Dries very fast.
Yeah.
Usually within 30 minutes it's dry to the touch.
Cool.
You know, we recommend closer to 2 to 3 hours before you put another coat on.
Yeah.
Again, especially in a really humid climate.
What about durability in comparison to other paints?
It's very durable.
Okay.
It's a very durable paint. Has held up really well. I think it's it sells globally.
Okay.
So it's out of Canada.
So it doesn't sound like there's much sacrifice either one in the use of it or two like long-term viability for the product.
Right. Okay. Right. It's a good,
cool.
It's a good, I mean, you still have to, people always ask me all the time, you know, is it more durable to stain a piece of wood or paint a piece of wood, a piece of furniture? And so I think you always have painted furniture, it is what it is. It's like painting your trim or painting your paint scratches and it does scuff over time. It just sort of, it's paint.
Sure, yeah.
It's your wall, it's your, but as far as a durable paint goes, we really do like the Fusion.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that. One of the, so I really wanted to go to school for architecture and ended up going to do civil engineering, but one of the things of, I still listen to a couple different architecture podcasts and there's a guy who said, something I'll never forget, and he said, something that's labeled or marketed as maintenance-free means it cannot be maintained.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really there's more brilliance there on mm-hmm. it seems really simple, but like vinyl is very difficult to repair.
Yes.
But like different woods and things like that are easy to patch. Plaster's easy to patch and fix mm-hmm. over time. It's one of the reasons they used it all throughout Europe, is like you go through and you would redo them, either interior or exterior. It's just a very easy product mm-hmm. Something to maintain. And so I think a lot of the marketplace has shifted from maintain it and upkeep it to use it and throw it away.
Well, and that's a very interesting point that you bring up, because like take this farm table, this has a waxed finish on it. Mm-hmm. So I get a lot of people, I don't want to do anything to it. I want you to just put a poly finish on it so it wipes real easy and I don't ever have to touch it.
Yeah.
Well, what happens is that poly finish does break down, and you can mm-hmm. get stuff underneath it and stains underneath it or scratches, or you know, the first time you turn around and your kid has a steak knife and the fork, and now you've broken through that finish. Yeah. And then, you know, Aunt Polly sets a glass down and the wine gets underneath yeah. that.
Or you so lay now, something hot on it, it becomes tacky and
yeah.
gross.
Yeah. And so now everything is underneath that finish. Mm. And so you're right, you cannot maintain that without stripping down the entire top mm-hmm. and redoing the whole surface. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I have a wax surface and I come in and my four-year-old just took her marker and her crayon to that wax surface, I can take a light sanding pad and I can sand that right off and my wax and reapply my wax and I am done.
Yeah.
So it's you have to maintain it, but mm-hmm. it is much easier to maintain than this no maintenance surface. Mm-hmm. You're right, means you cannot maintain it. You yeah. have to get it totally refinished if something happens to
yeah,
it. So
yeah.
I tend to be one that says I would rather maintain it.
Yeah.
But it does mean that, you know, you do get the farmhouse look. You're going to show some rings, you're going to show some stains, you're going to show some stuff on it, and you yeah. do have to work at it. But
there's this, I mean, it's a funny thing, especially like with, once you have kids, we were talking about this before we started, like the kids kind of introduce chaos into your world. But there's something about sometimes where like a little ring or a little something mm-hmm. happens and you're like, I remember when that happened.
Yeah.
And there's a memory yep. attached to it. Mm-hmm. I've always said that, like, you know, there's a, you know, the movement's still pretty big, but this minimalism movement mm-hmm. that's going on, and there's a lot that good comes from it. But one of the things that minimalism, I think, kind of ignores is, you know, yeah, you don't need another writing desk, but, you know, if you get a writing desk handed down to you from your great grandfather, like, minimalism would say to get rid of it. And I think it kind of gets both focus on objects. One is the complete, you know, unattachment to them. And materialism, I would say, is the complete attachment to things.
Right.
And I think that there's probably a little bit of a happy medium where you go, I appreciate things for what they are.
Right.
And so I think that there are objects that I have around. I have like an old watch that my great grandfather like left me, and it didn't work, mm-hmm. but I'm never getting rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I did, just every time I see it, it reminds me of him.
Yeah.
Some really special pieces like that. So I think that's cool.
Quentin and I are in a constant, I tend to throw everything away and he tends to keep everything.
Sure.
And it's kind of, he's been very good for me and I've been very good for him for the exactly what you just said. Because sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm really sad when I've thrown out memories.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, it's not in the, it's the memory isn't in the thing. It's in the person, and I'm not emotionally attached to this thing.
Sure.
But then you don't have this cozy home mm-hmm. when you walk in that does have the memories that are right in front of you.
Sure.
So there is definitely a balance when we're trying to make our homes. What's in them is very important, and having those memories and cozy, and it doesn't mean we have to cram it full of every memory ever, but it also means that we don't throw every memory out either.
Yeah.
So there is that balance of what is important to keep and what is just junk and holding me back.
Yeah, I brought this up in a couple of different podcasts about this idea of the Vitruvian principles. Have you ever heard that term?
I haven't.
It's an architectural term. Vitruvian man, the guy that's in the circle.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
It's about, like, anyway, so in architecture they have, is it beautiful, is it functional, and is it durable? And that's what makes good architecture, at least that's kind of some of the core principles. And functional would be like, does it work? Can it be adapted to work? Can it have multiple uses? You know, because if it's not functional, you know, eventually something that's not functional, you get rid of because it doesn't make any sense. Is it durable? Well, it needs to last, right? Because something that is functional and beautiful but only lasts for a short period of time has a tendency to, you know, be bundled up and thrown away. Mm-hmm. And then the last one, which I personally think is the most important, is it beautiful? Because if it's not beautiful, and that term can be very malleable, like, because there are a lot of consistent things that humans tend to value when it comes to beauty. Sometimes symmetry, colors, something that seems vibrant or healthy, those types of things. But specifically when it comes to architecture and things, is that when you go into your house and it's beautiful, you value it more. You clean it more often. You take better care of the things that are in it. You feel better. And I think people tend to drastically undervalue what it means to have a beautiful space. Mm-hmm. As I've gotten older, the more I valued that, is that when I walk into my home or my space, that it's organized and beautiful, that there is a good mix of things that maybe are, like flowers almost are superfluous. Like there's no real reason other than to bring beauty to the space. Yeah. And so I look at, you know, stuff in here and I think, like, you have this ability to not only take things that maybe someone didn't value and make them value it again, which is really cool. That conservation, the green piece, like something that would have been thrown away, and bring new life to it. And then even help them value and adore their space more, which I think is just really neat.
Oh, thank you.
So, where are we going? What's the vision? Where do you want to see this grow over the next 2, 3, 10, 20 years?
We see some gaps in some of the things that we offer. When we go into somebody's home, we want to be able to provide a full service for them. Mm-hmm. Like, I have parts of it right now. We currently have, like, I have your dresser. And they're like, well, I need, we're doing a master bedroom. Mm-hmm. So we have the dresser and the end tables. And they're like, well, can you help me? Like, what color bedding would I do? I don't have any bedding. Mm-hmm. What color, like, or we're doing a living room. Like, I don't have any couches. I don't have any. So filling in some of those pieces. Mm-hmm. We actually did, we went to Furniture Market this fall. We did just bring in a line of bedding. Not all of it is in yet. It's coming in. So over the next couple of years, we want to be able to bring in some couches. Again, I have a very strong opinion about kid-friendly furniture. Mm-hmm. My kids destroy everything, and we have a 7-month-old Great Dane right now who
I know you guys got a dog.
Who as well is,
you know,
just
dogs can
like
be destructive
me.
But I find that kids tend to be another level.
Yes, yeah, but well, the 8-year-old and the Great Dane together have cleared off every coffee table service and surface. Every plant is it's just a whole new level of no accessories right now. Mm-hmm. So slip covered couches, things that can be washed, things that are good and durable, but like I want to feel confident that I can tell a family, like, yes, this is washable, this is durable, to the best of my ability, those types of things. So we just want to be
wants to have your kid to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and then come jump on the couch with you,
right?
And you're like,
really,
oh,
kid?
Come on,
I
man.
Just watched...
I love you, but a little bit of foresight.
Yes, yes. And my favorite is the kid telling you something, and then the dog whips around, and it's the cup of coffee and the tail, and it's like
nice.
All over
you. Well,
you
did
you
get a Great Dane. Yeah. You basically got
a
small horse.
I did. It's the house pony. We call him the house pony. But so again, just filling in some of the gaps with a few new orderable pieces that go along with our vintage pieces, which again will always be our bread and butter. We love that. So we do love our space. We want to continue to put in some nice roll-up doors, different things like that that will improve the space. Again, we love the city, improving the city and the space.
You've done some classes. Are you going to kind of expand on that too?
Yes, expanding on the classes. We want to have a little bit more space to be able to accommodate more people. Classes, videos, video series available for people, and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So
neat.
Yep.
Well, I like I said, when I first came in, I knew that you had started it, and we kind of had talked a little bit previously, mostly about foster stuff a while back, but I had no idea how big you had gotten. This is just so cool. I'm like,
thank you.
I feel like a proud friend.
Well, like, thank you.
Oh man, this is so neat. So I just, I don't know, I get really excited when I see my friends succeed, and so this is just makes my heart happy. We are at the point where we do the giveaway.
All right.
You can't have my mug, so this is my mug. Have you considered what you want to do? What are the people at home going to fight for? What are they?
Well, we would like to give away a set of, these are local made coasters that we carry.
Okay.
From a local girl, EJ Coastals makes these for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd like to give away a set of four of the coasters. Mm-hmm. And we just brought in a whole new line of candles over here. So you'll get a set of four coasters, a candle,
okay,
and a $200 gift certificate.
Daggone.
To come shop. Because if I give away a dresser, it might not be your style.
Sure.
So you can come and either put it toward a piece of furniture or some of our accessories.
That is amazing. So. All right. So let's comment on what's the favorite piece of furniture or decoration in your house. Tag at least one friend. You'll be entered into the drawing to win a set of four coasters, a candle, and a $200 gift certificate, which is pretty crazy. That's amazing. So thank you so much for having me in here. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Very fun.
That's a wrap.